speaking with one Lawrence Wilcox. That's right, Larry Wilcox. And he will join us tomorrow evening. Actually, I already taped the interview, but let me just say this. You're not going to want to miss this. There are a couple of stories in there that, yeah, you're going to want to catch. Apparently, it was pretty wild on the chipset. Let's just leave it at that. He gets into it enough. Sue from Midland Beach made it happen. Outstanding. I'm sorry I ever doubted her. But we did do it, and we'll run that for you tomorrow night. We actually have a little editing to do on it before it runs, just to give you a heads up.
We want to make it a little more PG-rated.
Yeah. That's about right, my friend. That's about right. So you do not want to miss this. We're going to air it tomorrow night. I promise. You'll enjoy. 718-937-6666.
The stars shine in the sky. The night air is tinged with anticipation. And it is time to meet the Continental.
Chris Carlos!
After 1 o'clock. On a fan. Let's light this candle. Carlin with you. 718-937-6666. It is a jam-packed show. A cavalcade of stars, if you will. And we have got plenty to do between now and 5:30. We will run the gamut. Ray Martell's here doing an outstanding job, and we've got plenty to do at 718-937-6666. Get on the phones now. We will get to the calls very early and very often this evening, as we generally do. I've been promising it for a long time. Thanks to Sue in Midland Beach, Larry Wilcox tonight. Officer John Baker. Chips. That's done. And it's coming up next hour. Also, the head coach at Pitt, Jamie Dixon, will join us. Well, we promised it. We've been talking about it all week. And one of the great stars of the early 80s television and the very successful television show Chips, Larry Wilcox, joins us on the fan. Larry, it's Chris Carlin in New York City. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Listen, we appreciate the time. I mean, it's amazing. The show came up a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure it kind of drives you nuts, but you must get people all the time coming up and talking about how much they enjoyed that show that ran from 79 to 83.
No, actually, you know, I feel like I was very lucky. I got to go to the carnival, and believe me, I rode all the rides, so I had a good time.
Well, let's talk about that. Take me through it, if you can, a little bit. When you first heard about the show like this and early in your acting career, what were you going through leading up when you finally went in to try to get a part on the show?
Well, the same thing most young men are going through, which unfortunately for you listeners out there, it's called male identity crisis. But, you know, I was a young guy with his heart on his sleeve and all of his hormones on his sleeve, so I was having a good time, and along came this series. And at that point in time, sometimes you know, young actors think that they're artists, so I was thinking that I didn't want to do this series because I was a studied actor. But in retrospect, I was very lucky to do it and ended up doing it for 5 years, and then it reran, you know, on TNT for like 20 years.
Absolutely. So
exposure for a long time.
And I'm sure some royalty checks probably didn't hurt either.
Yeah, I got royalty checks, made a lot of money for those 5 years, and then after that I went on to produce, and I produced and directed and produced my own television series for 5 years called the Ray Bradbury Theater for HBO and USA Cable, and then did a bunch of movies of the week, and then, in my opinion, my shelf life was over, so I had to, you know, resell a new pair of shoes or become a plumber. And a plumber is when you're doing infomercials at midnight selling nylon. So I didn't want to do that, so I moved on into technology.
Well, your old partner's actually doing that now here on the East Coast. Maybe we'll get to that in a little bit.
But, yeah.
But at any rate, early in the show, did you kind of know that you guys were going to have some kind of success with it?
No, to be honest with you, I really didn't. That's why television is so weird. You know, you just roll the dice, and sometimes you think you're doing a great movie or a great TV show, and it's just boring. And in our case, I thought it was kind of cornball and trite, but the motorcycles, I think, were unique at that time, and I really felt like the motorcycles and the point of view from the motorcycles were the star of the show. When I look back on it, it is very dorky based on today's time, but but on the same hand, it was positive and always had a good story, and, you know, it was good for families.
How about the relationships on the show? There were some things over the years they talked about, like, you and Eric didn't get along for a while. Can you kind of take us through that scenario? What was it like with him on the show? He had become such kind of an idol to women, and you had too. What about the popularity of it and you guys dealing with one another? What was that like?
Well, you know, a lot of people would like to think that it was all, you know, fighting and jealousy and all of those things. But, and, you know, I'm a pretty candid person, so I'll tell you the truth. I don't have any need for politics. But the goal was to make a successful show, and we did that, number one. Number two is that you have two young men who have identity crises and their egos getting caressed every day. I always say that it takes an ugly guy to star in a television series to think that he's a handsome stud, right? And all of a sudden he has an arm piece and he thinks he's something. So the shows like that really did a lot for everyone's ego. And I think that Eric's background, being a Puerto Rican from New York, and my background, being a hick from Wyoming, you know, we're different guys. And it took me a long time, maturity and hopefully some wisdom, to realize different's okay. But when you're a punk, different isn't okay. So... You know, I think we were kind of punks at that point in time. But he's a good guy, and he's trying to make a living in the film business. And, you know, God bless him. Hope he has a success.
Larry Wilcox, one of the stars of Chips, the great series from the late 70s, early 80s, with us here on The Fan. Of course, Officer John Baker. And like you said, you're this kid from Wyoming, and all of a sudden you got a hit series in L.A., and everything that goes with that, whether it be the big house and the cars and, I'm sure, the women. What is that lifestyle like for the guys out there who are listening?
Well, just read Joe Namath's book and you'll understand. But actually, it was funny reading Joe Namath's book, because he talks about one of his favorite girlfriends was Randy Oaks, who was actually a star, the blonde girl that was a star on our series. Mm. But, you know, what was it like? It's every male indulgent fantasy you can think of. And, you know, I try not to be graphic, but, you know, we had motorhomes, so it was great.
As the series is winding down and you guys are kind of getting the feeling that maybe this might be the end of the road for the show, what were their feelings about the whole experience?
Well, as it was winding down, you know, you're really misguided in terms of where you are in life. I always kind of look back and say, you're like a pair of shoes on the shelf. One week they're buying loafers, maybe the next week they're buying something else. And in our point in time, we thought that our shoes were going to sell forever. In fact, we thought we were going to peak later. Hmm. And, you know, what really happened is, after that, I tested for another series, which NBC president picked me to do, and then a bunch of politics happened in the background, and I ended up not doing, which was Miami Vice.
Wow.
And so what happens in your career, you know, I could tell you a bunch of shoulda, coulda, wouldas, but it's, you know, it's kind of luck, and if it happens, you better go for it, because you never know when it's going to be over. And I think at the end of our career, in my case, I thought that I would go on producing and directing, and I did for a while. But even producing and directing, you know, actors... To me, this is not going to sound very nice, but I am so tired of watching actors being indulgent on some award show talking about the greatest award that they got. I'd almost rather see a plumber get an award for a 90 or a 45 or something.
Wow.
It's that boring to me. But, you know, we just thought we'd go on forever, and it didn't happen.
Having been in that kind of situation for a few years, you look back now and you kind of have a good feel for what they're going through. So what ticks you off the most about it when you see it?
Well, I mean, there's, first of all, I think that if young men and women can be in the film business at that point in their life, they should do it, because hopefully it gets rid of a lot of needs and it satisfies a lot of things, financial, mental, all kinds of issues, right? So that part I think is great. Not many times in life, anybody that complains about going to the carnival and riding all the rides, something's wrong with them. I enjoyed the rides. And I was always looking for a new one, so I had a great time. But having said that, as you get older and hopefully wiser and more mature, you just realize the indulgence of, you know, people that are just wallowing in their mirror and their image and what they say and what they wear and what award they won and who's on their arm at what party. And it's just all a big show. And, you know, once you get away from it, you realize that, do you really want to promote yourself? I mean, you are the product. Are you really that egotistical that you want to always promote yourself? And at that point in time, I did. Now I look back and say, what a punk.
Larry Wilcox, former star of Chips, with us here on The Fan. You said earlier that I realized I had a shelf life. When you look at Eric Estrada, he's doing the Surreal Life. He's doing an infomercial selling land down in Florida. Has Eric not realized that he had a shelf life as well?
Well, you know, different people have different standards. And as I said before, different doesn't mean it's wrong. But for me, you know, a lot of times if Eric isn't able to transition into other areas, you know, it's one of the things that I didn't really answer for you is the transition. The transition from making that much money to unemployment is a major mental and the economical transition, as every athlete will tell you. And so, you know, one minute you're making seven figures and the next minute you're not, and you still have the same lifestyle. So some people, and maybe in Eric's case, I don't know because I haven't asked him this, and, you know, it's his choice, not mine, is that he's decided that his life and his income future is to have his face on television. I love anonymity. I don't want to go to the grocery store and have anyone know me and go, gosh, golly, gee, you know, I like them to talk to me like a regular person so I can understand who they are. But some people stay on television. He chose to do shows like Surreal and, you know, some of the other things that he's done. And I've always thought that Eric Estrada was, you know, could have been a major star if he would have been handled correctly. And deep down in my marketing and management mind, I always wish I could have helped him. But, you know, there was really no opening for me to help him in any way. So he made some different choices, and I wish him well with them. My preference would be I wouldn't have done them, but so be it.
Now, you guys did a reunion a few years ago. If they did another one, would you do it again?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, two things is that, you know, I own a public company, and you want to always help the company and help the brand and help the stock and have people invest in the company. And so anything that I can do in terms of the company that promotes the company, that's when I would prostitute myself. And the question is, when and how do you want to prostitute yourself? And my opinion is for my own company, UC Hub. So, you know, that's what I would do, and I would enjoy doing it. And we did a reunion, and by the way, it was a blast because, you know, everybody was more mature. There was no competitive environment. Randy Oaks did not come back, unfortunately. She would have looked great in her little tight outfit, but maybe she didn't fit in those anymore. I don't know. But it would have been great to see her and some of the other people. But, yeah, I'd do it.
Let's prostitute for you a little bit here. Tell us about what you are doing now.
Thank you.
No problem.
Well, I own a technology company. The website's UCHub.net. And our ticker symbol is UCHB. I have to be careful because the NASD and the SEC will come down on me. But all I can say is I'm very optimistic. And we're a digital distributor of digital services to a city or a community. So we offer government services, health services, education services, communication services, all around a transactional-based business, which means that anytime you buy something with your credit card, it goes through our processor. Anytime that you want a debit card because you're unbanked or credit challenged and you can't get a credit card, you can go to eSafeCards.com and log on and get our credit card or our debit card or a gift card or a payroll card. So all of those transactions drive a digital city, and that's what we do is we write software that manages and distributes all of those applications to the constituents within a city.